Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
So guys, with that in mind, with the healing component that Chris just mentioned right there, what do you think happens next? And I'm not talking about, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, but what are we doing a week from now? Is this going to be just another, since Key, you've mentioned the 92 riots. We've all mentioned all these other horribly, horribly tragic incidents that we've talked about going all the way back 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago. What's a week from now look like?
You know, in my opinion, it's all going to depend on what we're, number one, to me, it depends on when these other three officers get arrested. I think that's going to be a big part of it, because a lot of people obviously want to see that happen. I think it'll slow down in terms of the violence that's out there with the looters. That's going to slow down. But it's going to be important for those other three dudes to be arrested. And then from that point on, now you start the process of conviction, sending the message, and then the political people, along with the leaders in the communities, continue to have dialogue, how to make a major change on everything that has transpired or happened prior to that.
All right, we'll come back and continue that part of the conversation as well. But as promised, we are joined right now by the head coach of LAFC, Bob Bradley, joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Bob, good morning. Thanks for coming on.
Actually, we could continue with that discussion, because that's what I'm thinking about this morning as well.
Great.
Which aspects of it, Coach?
I'm sorry, I missed the question.
I said, which aspects of this conversation you want to extend? Because there's a lot of different places to go with this.
I heard you talk about justice for George Floyd and his family. And obviously, one cop has been arrested, but there's three more that were right there. That's a week ago. And if we are going to move forward in any way, racial equality and standing strong for what we want to be about as a country, this is a moment to see if we can really work together and mobilize and reform. Because up till now, we don't get enough people together on the same page. And it's a tough fight, because as much as there are many people who believe in in a just society, unfortunately, we have others that are not in favor of that. And so if we don't mobilize all the people who believe in the same ideas and the same values and equality and economic opportunity and in the criminal justice system, then unfortunately, we see this type of terrible incident happen again and again and again.
Bob, have you had a chance to discuss what, you know, never mind the pandemic and the restart of the season and all that, but the issues that we've just been discussing this morning and for the last several days with your team, have you gotten to address it collectively with your players?
Unfortunately, not collectively, because we're in this phase of individual training during the pandemic. But when players come in, we've got a number of young players that are living downtown, and we have players of color. And so I have discussed individually with all of them when they come in what's going on, both in terms of perspective, because young people sometimes need perspective, also in terms of safety for them. Making sure that they understand that the spark in this case was, of course, what happened last Monday. But whenever protests start, unfortunately, there are also forces beneath the surface that pop into the situation that are there for other agendas to cause trouble. And so trying to get them to understand the bigger part of what's going on, for me, is an important part of being a coach.
Coach, how do you think what's going on in society right now outside the pandemic will affect the MLS moving forward? Because pretty much in every single city that there's an MLS team, there's been major protests.
Well, in that respect, I'd like to talk about LAFC because we are only in our third season. But from the beginning, LAFC had a vision to really be part of Los Angeles, to connect with each neighborhood. When you look into the stands at Bank of California Stadium, I have so much pride because I really, truly feel that I see Los Angeles. And the commitment that we've made in building our club has to be stronger than ever. We need to be part of the process to make sure that we see reform, to make sure that we provide opportunity, to make sure that we speak loud and strongly against any type of incident, racism, prejudice, hatred that leads to that has led to the protests that we see. You know, when people come together, it's very important to not just talk about what's happening this weekend, but what led to it. Why did we get to this point? Why are people so angry? And for me, I think LAFC can be a real voice in our community and help in those ways.
Coach, you know, a lot of people are going to come out of this still emotional, still agitated, and want to know what to do next. Is there anything that the LAFC Foundation has or anything that you are cognizant of that if you're fans of the team and you have certain feelings about what's going on right now, that there's somewhere you can go to direct?
I don't have a specific place at the moment, but I know that there are very, very big discussions going on inside LAFC. We have still a tremendous connection between the club and the supporters. We want to always hear what they think and make sure that we are together in our efforts. When we talk about being together, it's not just showing up in Bank of California and supporting a team. It's more about a mission in the city and a cause and a way to make people, again, mobilize and work together. So we'll continue to find the right ways. We've got so many good people inside LAFC, and they have worked incredibly hard to create this connection with the city and with the fans. And in this period, we need to work harder to make sure that it's done the right way.
Bob Bradley, the head coach of LAFC, joining us here on The Morning Show. And Bob, like you mentioned, you know, you look around the Bank of California Stadium and you see the city reflected in the people that are there watching your team. What can the team do? What can MLS do? What can sports, you know, writ large do to have that reflection of your community there in the stands be the reflection of the community at large? How do you use athletics to try to say, this is what it can be, this is how we need to bring it out here?
There are many ways. Obviously, on simple levels, you see moments when a player or a team take an action. Of course, everyone knows, and it's even more meaningful now that when Colin Kaepernick took a knee, if you didn't understand what that was about, then you should understand that now. When LeBron puts a T-shirt on that says, "We can't breathe," if you didn't understand what that meant the day he put it on, you better understand it now. So there are individual things that happen. But bigger than that are efforts to really work in the community. One of our owners is Magic Johnson. And I think everybody in Los Angeles knows that when his basketball career ended and his business career started, what an incredible force he's been in Los Angeles to provide opportunity in all neighborhoods for people of all color. And I think that when you have a club in a city it's more than just what happens on the field. If you really want to connect and be powerful, then you've got to find ways to be bigger than that. And as I said, LAFC from the outset has had this vision. And now when you start with the pandemic and then you go through recent events, our voice has to get louder and stronger.
Bob Bradley, the head coach of LAFC, joining us here on the morning show. Excuse me, Jose, go ahead.
There's a part of me that is very happy and excited to see statements from these leagues, whether it's the NBA, the NFL, MLS. They're very powerful statements. But these leagues are made of very powerful and rich men and women. Why haven't we seen enough from these individual owners to put their muscle that got these stadiums built in areas where perhaps they had to manipulate some things politically, not use that same capital to help address some of these issues that you're so passionate about, that I'm passionate about, that we all are concerned with?
That's a very good question. I think with recent events, and I include the pandemic, because obviously the pandemic has affected everyone in the world, but we also know that it has more severely affected the Black community, the Brown community. When we talk about essential workers during the pandemic, people who have made a difference, again, so many people from different communities that have made the difference. And so you hope that inside an organization, the conscience and the soul ends up showing in different ways. And you mentioned owners. I chose in the moment to just speak about Magic, because with the very diverse group of owners that we have, certainly Magic's presence in the city is big. And I would hope that all of our owners in different ways, maybe even in ways that aren't so obvious, stand in the way that you describe, and that we can find ways to push things in a better direction. It's a big effort. And I think when the type of acts of brutality occur again and again and again, then we also have to be honest and say that whatever we've done in the past hasn't been good enough. And I often talk about perspective. Perspective becomes important because then you take time to think about somebody who's in a different position than you, somebody who has a different color skin. When you go to vote, if the only thing you do is vote for what's good for you, then that doesn't bring about the necessary change to make sure that when we talk about prosecutors and judges and police chiefs, that now we are getting the type of real action that's needed to make change. So, look, it's a topic across every radio show in the country this morning. But this effort to really get the people who are on the same page to work together is incredibly important, because unfortunately there are still people who don't want change.
Bob Bradley, the head coach of LAFC. Go ahead, Key. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, Coach, what would you say to those men and women that are out there terrorizing, vandalizing, looting across the states, destroying others' property, and not selling the message of protest, but hijacking the message by doing such things, which will allow the media to shape this as something totally different?
First, there are examples in the country, cities where there have been peaceful protests. I'm sure you guys saw the police chief in Flint, Michigan, who ended up marching. I'm from New Jersey, and there's been peaceful protests in Newark, New Jersey, and Camden, New Jersey. And many of the protests that we see around the country start in a peaceful way. When the violence starts, it becomes more complicated. There are people who then just try to take advantage of the situation and get something for them, the looters. And I would tell those people that they are interfering with the effort of others to try to bring about change. But I also believe that the violence is also a product of outside groups. You know, I coached the national team in Egypt for 2 years. And during my 2 years in Egypt, I lived this. I saw that what's on the surface is very easy to see and understand, but there are more forces at work beneath the surface. And so when we see these fires and when we see people with hoodies that are just smashing out windows, it would be a great thing if we could arrest and know where these people came from. How did they mobilize? Because all of this is designed for far different reasons than people who show up to honor George Floyd's life and try to bring about change in that part of the system. So this is complicated. The media becomes the media is challenged in this because, unfortunately, I learned this in Egypt as well, is where does the average person find the truth? Where do you go for news? And we have so much news that's agenda-driven and ratings-driven. So it becomes difficult. And I'm not sure how many people, when they see the news and they see the fires and they see the windows being smashed, I don't know how many people take the time to think, well, who are these people? Where did they come from? Why are they there? Because that's not... Many of those people are not there for the same reason that others are trying to bring about racial equality and changes in the United States.
Bob Bradley, head coach of LAFC, joining us on the morning show. Bob, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, man.
Okay,
thanks a lot, Coach.
You know, there's a lot there, guys. And one thing that Bob said a couple of different ways I think is incredibly important. It's kind of the central theme of the day. We'll tell you what it is next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. That voice you heard right there is Lavelle Moten. He is a college basketball coach in North Carolina. He's the head coach of North Carolina Central University. And he was talking about some of his fellow colleagues at the Power Five conferences, specifically some white head coaches at Power Five conferences who have not been as outspoken as I think many of us would like. You know, what he's talking about there, what Bob Bradley mentioned, what Dr. Edwards mentioned when he joined us earlier, LZ, what you've been talking about all day is this idea of strategic discipline, that do not let a moment like this go by getting distracted by people who are breaking things and setting fires, but rather identify those people and remove them from the process so the protest itself, the message itself, can be heard and not get lost in what is compelling video of a fire or a broken window, and we start talking about that as opposed to the reason this happened in the first place.
Well, I think as long as you continue to send the message that we're sending out, then I think people will get it. They will start to see that the people that are doing the looting are not aligned with the people that's doing the protesting. There's two separate situations going on. And I think people will start to see that. But the media, the television viewers, the newspaper editors, the social media content that's being put out there has to focus on the message and not the looters. If you continue to push that, it will flip back to where it was from several days ago.
In fact, what needs to happen from a national coverage perspective as well as local is to recognize that these aren't related stories directly. They're indirectly related, but they don't bleed into each other. there are looters running through the streets, breaking glass, taking things out, and they have nothing to do with the other story, which is about peaceful protesters who are upset, not just about what happened to Mr. Floyd, but what's been happening decade after decade after decade prior to that. You know, we had a gentleman call on, and he was talking about this is the things that, like, X-Clan and Ice Cube were talking about. 20 years before that, Marvin Gaye asked you what was going on. Like, this isn't... So even through our culture in terms of art, this is a conversation that's been going on decades after decades to the 70s, 60s, way back when. This is an ongoing conversation. And that is totally separate than what some people who are taking advantage of this window in time are doing. They're being criminals, and they need to be covered. But they don't need to be covered as an extension of the protest. They need to be covered juxtaposed to the context, to the protest.
The head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, Frank Reich, he issued a statement. We'll hear that in just a second. But he's talking about what we've been talking about, not necessarily the looters and the violence that we're seeing, but rather what is taking place in the world and how we need to do something. Here's the head coach of the Colts, Frank Reich.
Injustice. Few things stir the human heart and soul like injustice. When we see it, feel it, experience it, it's heart-wrenching. It's not enough for a person who looks like me to say, I'm not racist. This kind of talk and thinking, it typically lends itself to a posture of neutrality, indifference, and passivity. It's easy to be silent and do nothing when it doesn't directly impact you. This attitude simply doesn't evoke any conviction about doing what is right and standing up for the inherent dignity and rights of all people, no matter the color of their skin. I stand firmly behind the Colts statement, and in particular, the phrase that says, we abhor racism. Racism is vile, deplorable, detestable. There's no form of it that is acceptable, and in no way can it be justified. Our black community has bore the brunt of this injustice far too long. I believe that we all have a personal responsibility to speak up and to act in ways that build each other up, not tear each other down. I believe each one of us can make a difference if we're willing to grow personally and display the courage necessary for us to take steps of progress in this most important of issues.
LZ, I know you're critical of the of this statement that the NFL made earlier, but all of the words that you did not hear in the NFL statement were right there in Frank Reich's comments.
Yeah, absolutely. And therein lies the difference. You know, it's one thing to say, oh, man, this is terrible. You know, we stand with you. We want peace and love and, you know, all the flowery stuff. But then comes the work. And if you're not willing to do what Coach Reich just did, which is talk about the work that needs to be done, then you're not doing this right. I said it earlier in the show. I said it on CNN. And I'm going to say it again here. If you are a white person that identifies as non-racist or not being racist, that's not good enough. That is not good enough. And this is why. That allows you to sit on the sidelines, say, that's not me, but then go about your life enjoying the benefits, whether you're conscious of them or not, of what it means to be white in America. You get to still enjoy your privilege, but you separate yourself by saying, I'm not racist. That is not good enough. That's not going to change anything. What would change something is being what the coach is talking about, action, being anti-racist. Because when you're anti-racist, that means you're trying to kill the very system that you've benefited from, that your ancestors have benefited from, and that has oppressed minorities for hundreds of years. That means you're against that system, and you're willing to put in the work to tear that down. That's different than being non-racist. The people who say, I don't see color, scare me the most. Because if you don't see color, that means one or two things. You're either lying to me, or you're lying to yourself. That doesn't mean you're racist. I want to make sure I'm clear about that. I'm not calling you a racist if you say that phrase. What I'm saying is that there is absolutely nothing wrong with recognizing different colors of skin. The problem comes with the judgment of the different colors of skin. So don't
absolutely
say, I don't see color as a way to try to safeguard yourself from being called a racist. No, it's okay to acknowledge and see the differences. Just make sure you see them equally.
And I had that conversation with a friend of mine last night to try to get him to understand.
Key, I want to hear about that conversation, but let's come back and let's do that. Let's do that next, because I don't want it to run short. I know you mentioned it before, and it's incredibly powerful. So I want to make sure we give that the time that it needs. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
It's the mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, right there talking about feeling the hurt. And, you know, kind of going hand in hand with what you were talking about a second ago, LZ, and with the story you're getting ready to tell, Key, is I think, you know, all of us with a soul and a heart, we all hurt when we all feel terrible about what we've seen. But I don't think a lot of us, and I'll speak for myself here, know quite exactly what to do moving forward. Like, how do we get involved? What is the next step to try and not just go, oh yeah, I don't like that. I, you know, okay, cool. Let me turn on the TV and go back to doing what I was doing. Beyond the, I don't like that. It's the, how do I fix that? How do I get involved in that? What's that phase of this?
Well, you know, Travis, it goes back to a conversation I was having with a good friend of mine yesterday, and trying to get him to understand. Don't judge. Don't judge what the people are doing. Understand why they are doing it. Understand the oppression for years. Understand that you can go all the way back to 1921 in the Tulsa race massacre that they call the Black Wall Street that doesn't exist anymore. Understand those sort of things. Understand the Watts riots. Understand that what went on with Rodney King, understand Latasha Harding being murdered over an orange juice and somebody getting 400 or 500 hours of community service. Understand all of those things and the frustration of watching somebody murdered live on television. Understand those things. Understand a black news reporter from CNN being arrested live on TV, even though he has the credentials at doing it. The white officer, the white reporter a block away, nothing was happening to him. Understand when a guy guns down a church, and are they willing to give him some water and help him along the way and ask him if he wants something to eat? Understand those sort of things and why people feel a certain way. No one ever condones looting. No one ever condones destroying other people's property that worked so hard to build up those sort of things. But like I explained to my friend, is we one percenters, man. We live behind gates. Okay. We live behind gates. In what's going on in the real world is the stuff that we're seeing on television. Police cars mowing people down. That's the real world. Like I explained to my kids, going to private schools, that's not the real world, man. My son was driving in the car with me yesterday and asked me and my wife, how come there's no schools that help these kids when we was driving to South Central LA? And we had to explain to him, there are schools. They're just not the schools like you're accustomed to. They're not private schools. They're public schools with a lack of librarians, a lack of computers, a lack of things to educate them. You know, and everybody says, well, these looters are looting and this, that, and the other. Yeah, but you got to understand why they're looting. It ain't necessarily because of the protest. It's because they're stuck in poverty. They don't have jobs. They don't have a lot of necessities that we have. And then people say, well, how come they can't get jobs? Well, come on, man. You know why they can't get jobs. Because it's a lack of education. And where does that start from? It starts from way back when. It ain't that easy. So until you with us, you are against us in understanding. So that's why I felt the way I felt when I saw people that I think in Wesley that's with me and not against me and not looking for an excuse. They looking to figure out how to make a change and how to make a difference and not sit up and judge based on their big houses on golf courses and all those sort of things. And it's been going on way too long because the normal people that's out there protesting, they're protesting. LZ was in the middle of the streets on the ground with his helmet on, doing the march. He was right there. They're doing his deal. And he can speak and tell you there's a handful of people that's trying to distract from the message to make people think that this is what we're mad about. So people can now go on television and say, see, this is why they're in the position they're in. They're tearing down our stores and they're burning up our shopping centers. No, that's not true. That's not true at all. And as long as you continue to keep believing that, then you ain't with us. You against us. That's the bottom line.
And there are people who, because of their own discomfort with this conversation, want to point to things. And I get this all the time. All the time. When you point out when the police officer shoots an unarmed person of color and there's nothing that happens to the officer, people go, yeah, but what about Chicago? What about black on black crime? What about this? What about that? That is a conversation. Absolutely, it is a conversation. However, that is a separate conversation. That's not an excuse for you to then skirt the issues that caused the conversation we were initially having. Those are separate pipes, separate silos. And yes, there are people working to reduce gang violence. There are people working to help make sure that students are in school and not being chewing. And there are people doing that within the communities we're talking about. That is a story. But that does not allow you to then escape the responsibility of talking about the initial story, which is a criminal justice system that has mistreated minorities since its establishment. That is a different story. And when you conflate the two, I see you. I see what you're trying to do. You're trying to pull away from the conversation because you're afraid that if we start to strip away some of the things that perhaps prop things up in society, that the whole thing's going to come down. The only thing that's going to come crumbling down is your misguided interpretation of who you are and who I am. That's the only thing that's going to get torn down. The country's not going to fall apart if we're being treat each other with respect and fairness. The Wall Street and all the markets and stuff aren't going to fall apart if we treat each other with humanity and dignity and respect. The only thing that's going to fall apart is the things that make you extremely comfortable because you have your own issues you haven't worked out yet in regards to race. That's the only thing that's going to fall apart. Everything else can run smooth.
You know, this crazy thing about this trap is as I was telling you guys in yesterday, we driving home, we got the obviously alert of the county closing down and early curfews. We had a curfew out here in Calabasas. Now, Calabasas is about 10 gated communities and one shopping center. Now, I said to myself, I said to my family and my wife, now, I know y'all laughing right now. I said, now, who in the hell coming out here to do anything? But we feel so compelled in our own little neighborhood and our own little bubble that we want to all of a sudden put ourselves in the conversation. Like, we got to go on lockdown. Like, stop it.
George Sedano joins us next for Crosstalk. That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. That's the strategic discipline that we were talking about, Key. You know, those visuals aren't available, then they're, you know, you can't show them. You're gonna have to show the people laying on the ground with their hands on the back. If that's all there is, then that's what they'll show.
Yeah, that's what they want to show, because that ain't all there is. Right? That's what they want to show. They want to get away from the hands on the ground and the hands in the air. They want to get away from that and make it seem as though the stuff that they're showing is all they have is the conversation of looting or burning cars or the cops had to ram their car into the barricade to push the people down because look how aggressive the people are coming at the car. Yeah, they're coming at the car because the car is coming at them. Like, stop. There's a guy in a 18-wheeler on the bridge in Minnesota flying through the damn protesters. Like, stop. They minding their business. This dude come flying through. The police officer, he doing 360 donuts in the middle of the street to try to get away. You in your car, man. You only, you can just sit there. They're not going to do nothing to you. But, you know how it go.
Yeah. Jorge, I didn't hear you. Is George here with us yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, George. Yeah. Come, you know, good morning, first of all, George. And you know, we've been spending, obviously, the entire show today talking about everything that's been going on, not just nationally, but here in Los Angeles as well. And just, you know, all the emotions that come through all of us. I would imagine that you're very similar to the rest of us. Just all of those things that come pouring out in moments like this were just front and center all weekend long.
Yeah, Travis, to be honest, it was just really hard to sleep this weekend. I was having this – I had a text conversation with Mark Spears of the Undefeated over the weekend, and it was just that, right? Like, I found myself watching this nonstop, basically up until last night at around, like, 11. I finally just turned away, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to be able to sleep again if I just – if I keep watching this. And, you know, it makes me very sad. And obviously, we're in a situation, man, where – It is wild to me that in 2020 that we are still having these conversations, but they are absolutely necessary. And whatever it takes to have people understand and illuminate them in understanding that there are more than one America, I think that that conversation is important. And whatever it takes to have that conversation needs to be brought to the table at the moment. And again, I'm not condoning some of the actions, right? To Key's point, I think 99% of these protests have been peaceful. And sometimes the media will focus on the 1%, but I do think that I understand, right? I'm not excusing the behavior. I'm explaining the behavior, you know?
Absolutely. And that's what I said. I've been saying that all morning with LZ. And you may not know this, George, but I was a part of the 1992 riots. I was a part of the looting at 18 years old because I didn't understand. I thought, that's what we should be doing because they just let, I don't remember, 5 officers off after beating a man damn near to death. I figured, okay, this was it. Broke, poverty, in junior college, just left high school. Okay, I'm going to go get some stuff. I didn't, but what I was destroying was my own neighborhood, my own community. So as I got older and understood that, I went and reinvested back into my community and helped build a shopping center in my community that hadn't been built in my community in 50 years. So I got it. I understand it. I'm not condoning their behavior, but I understand that you're dealing with poverty. You're dealing with laid off. You're dealing with a pandemic. You're dealing with all sorts of stuff in a time period where people are trying to find answers. So I understand why they're acting the way that they're acting, not that it's right.
I mean, think about this for a second. Big national news story, what, four and a half years ago, was about the contaminated water in Flint, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And we sent the cameras and the crews, and there were, you know, political rallies, and candidates showed up in the city, and you saw the black and brown faces literally being poisoned by their government. Literally being poisoned by the government. And we had the great visuals. And then we moved on. But you know what the hell else? Those people are still drinking that water. That water is still coming. The problem hasn't been solved.
Yeah.
So to your point, George, you know, I get, you know, being restless and sleepless because of what's happening in the city right now. But we won't change until we're restless and sleepless about what's happening to these people.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Yeah, you're 100% right. And I think that it's one of those things, Travis, I'll let you go in a second. It's one of those things, LZ, that, yes, like, again, it just kind of points back to what I finished with, which is there's more than one America. And I think that, you know, I understand that sometimes maybe other people who didn't grow up a certain way will be fatigued by this or made uncomfortable. There's nothing wrong with that. That's part of the way you grow. You grow when you're uncomfortable and you're put in a situation that you're unfamiliar with. And I think that educating ourselves to that in general, as a society is important. Go ahead, Travis. I'm sorry.
No, no. I'm glad you said that. I just, you know, going back to what you said at the beginning, George, about how, you know, it's 2020 and here we are, you know, having this conversation again. And I wonder what's going to happen next. And I was talking with the guys about this. And because, like you just mentioned, in 1992, we had a similar situation. We had conversations. And yet, you know, 30 years later, here we are again. You can go back prior to 1992 with the Watts riots in the 60s and then the 90s. And now here we are in 2020. So what's to prevent this from happening again when we get to 2035 or whatever the next time it is that this sparks up? That how do we not just repeat the cycle again? How do we not do this all over again? Because so far this has been something terrible happens. There's a reaction. We say, okay, let's do better. And we don't. How do we
you know
not
what,
repeat
though,
the cycle?
You know what though, Trav? And when you go back and you look at those different times, you go back to the 60s and you go back to the 90s and you go back to Made in America, the OJ and all of what went on with Rodney King and all. Like I said about Westlake, I feel different about people aligning themselves with us now,
yes,
opposed to,
yes,
before. They were scared to get involved at all. You had a handful, obviously, but nowhere near. Like, I looked at that thing in Colorado. I'm in 7,000 land on the ground. Now yep. Like, come on. They land on the ground with their hands on their back, screaming, no justice, no peace. Now, that wasn't happening in 92. They looked at us as fools burning our own communities, and that was it.
We will continue the conversation tomorrow. The Sedano Show is coming up next. We'll see you here, right here at 6 on the Morning Show on 710 ESPN.